The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon and welcome back. Today is Tuesday, second day of October, 2012. The Dow is down 69 points, S&P down 3.5, gold down $2.40, crude off about a nickel. So pretty much red across the board. SEC is tackling the issue of high-frequency trading, which back in the news again. It's not going away either, because there's just too much money at stake. The big hedge fund conference going on in Manhattan today. It's been going on a couple days now. David Einhorn, who most of you probably know who he is, or some of you know, Greenlight Capital. Last year, he the hammer down on Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, and the bottom fell out. He kind of has that effect on a stock when he announces at these conferences. However, Green Mountain has made a pretty strong comeback since Einhorn dissed them at last year's conference. Today, he lit into Chipotle. Now, I don't know if you've ever, we've all probably been to Taco Bell, but Chipotle, that was like the upscale Taco Bell. Here's a problem. It costs more, and it didn't taste anywhere near as good. Now, I know some people will argue that point because, well, some people will argue about anything. My wife very much likes their food at Chipotle. She thinks it's great. It's got all the rice and stuff. I don't know. For me, rice is like I'm going out for Chinese food or Japanese food. I understand rice and beans, staple of the Mexican diet. I know. I'm just saying. But anyway, Einhorn today, he slammed Chipotle and the stock took a huge drop. He said Taco Bell, there's too much competition from Taco Bell. He might have said their prices are better and the food tastes better. I'm not sure. But so that's what's happening in the world of the markets. There's a few other things. We'll talk about them real quick. Now, let's see here. Well, we had the automobile reports today. The market took a dive. Let me just talk about the screen up front, or the big screen in front of me right now, really quick. Oh, Dwayne G says he likes Chipotle. Okay. Well, me and Mr. Einhorn beg to differ. All right. this is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is an hourly chart. You can see the 2 days of market action we've had so far this week. You can see that we ran up and hit the weekly trading zone at 51.52 yesterday. Sold off sharply. Now look at this 1 hour that passed right through this zone. Came down to this next zone. Screeched to a halt. 35.36. 14.35/14.36. Spent 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours roughly going sideways. Staged a rally. Got up to 14.44/45. Spent 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours battling that area. Now it has dropped back down to this 35.36 area where it found support yesterday. Now here's what's interesting. If you go back and look at last week's charts and last week's weekly trading zone numbers. There was a day last week, and I would have to go back myself and look to pull that day out. But there was a day where in 1 hour we sliced right through a zone without, at least in the larger, now if we go to a smaller time frame, we might see some consolidation here. But just looking at the hourly candle, it appears as though we just sliced through it if it wasn't there. I said when that happens, what will typically happen is price will retrace and revisit that area, okay, because there should be consolidation here. And so the market will revisit it, consolidate for a period of time, and then do whatever it's going to do, whether that is move up to the next zone or back down to the zone below. This is absolutely identical to the days I pointed out, the 2 days last week. Now, last week I set it ahead of schedule, in other words, before it happened. On the day that we saw this, I said watch for this. This week I'm pointing it out after the fact, but it's something that you should watch for because the zones are always an area where we expect there to be some type of consolidation. We expect the market to pause and take a breather and give some thought to what comes next. Now, again, if we were to drill down to a smaller time frame, and we'll do that later in the show, we might see that type of back and forth action right here. I don't know. It may have gone through it just really quick. We'll take a look. If you can't see my charts, you need to go to cfrn.net. That is the homepage of our website. On the right-hand side, underneath the radio tower, is a red, white, and blue button that says click here. Click that, go to the next page, follow the instructions. You only have to register once each week. Once you register, then tomorrow you're going to just get an email, and every day for the rest of the week you'll get an email that says the radio show starts at noon. Click here when you're ready to join. So you register once, takes 30 seconds, and the rest of the week you get one-click access. That simple. Now, back to the auto reports that came out this morning. The numbers for Toyota were good, but I think everything else, not so good. For the first time since the end of the Second World War, the number of bicycles sold in Italy has overtaken the number of cars. In a radical departure for the car-mad country, home to legendary marques such as Fiat, Ferrari, and Lamborghini, 1,750,000 bikes were bought in 2011, compared to 1,748,000 motor vehicles. Beat them by 2,000. As austerity cuts deepen and petrol prices hit a new high, the purchase of new cars has dropped to levels not seen since the 70s. Families are buying bikes, ditching their second cars, and signing up for carpool schemes. By the way, scheme is not, in America it has a negative connotation. In the rest of the world, schemes just tend to mean an idea. People are signing up for carpool schemes, a major shift for a nation which has one of the highest car ownership rates in the world, with around 60 cars for every 100 people. Car ownership became a symbol of the Italian economic miracle in the 1960s and has steadily grown since, but as unemployment rises and living costs soar, it has become an unaffordable luxury for many Italian families. Petrol recently hit 2 euros a liter, the highest in Europe, and is estimated that the average car in Italy cost 7,000 euro a year to run. More than 60 years after the making of The Bicycle Thief, a classic film about a man desperately hunting for the stolen bike that he needs for work, Italians have also hauled around 200,000 old rusty bikes from their garden sheds and attics and restored them to roadworthiness. Out of a population of 60 million, 6.5 million Italians use a bike to get to work or school, while 10.5 million of them occasionally ride them, mostly on the weekends. Now, Facebook wants you to believe that clicks don't count. Facebook, under pressure to show its power as an advertising medium, is urging advertisers to consider the bigger picture instead of measuring success with the number of clicks an ad gets. The company says that a majority of sales come from people who see but don't necessarily click on online ads that promote campaigns, according to a study done with their new partner, Datalogic, which compiles consumer purchasing data from retail stores. Brad Smallwood, Facebook's head of measurement and insights, it sounds like a tailor. This is really his title, Brad Smallwood. He's Facebook's head of measurement and insights. Talked about the study, which analyzed nearly 50 digital campaigns today at an advertising conference in New York. Facebook listed some of the findings in a blog post today. People who saw Facebook ads but didn't click on them contributed to 99% of sales, according to the blog. How do you prove that? I'm going to say it again so you don't think I misspoke. People who saw Facebook ads but didn't click on them contributed to 99% of sales, according to this report from Facebook's new partner, Datalogix. Facebook said this is proof that making sure the marketing message is sent to the right customer is more important than clicks. The other findings, now we learned in the late 90s, we found out that banner impressions don't work, right? That the human eye learns to just ignore them. We don't even see them anymore. But I digress. The other findings sound like common sense. Sales increase if you put your ad in front of more people, which, as Facebook pointed out, is the way advertisers measure effectiveness on TV. Granted, you don't click on a TV commercial. However, when a TV commercial runs, they do have ways of measuring if the phone rings. How do they do that? Well, all these people are sitting at their desks and the phone starts ringing. Okay, I made my point. Facebook said that many marketers didn't trust that this held true for online ads, but its study proves otherwise. Ad campaigns that maximized its reach had, on average, a 70% higher return on investment. Additionally, Facebook said marketers should figure out the sweet spot for how frequently ads are placed, which transitioned nicely into a plug for Datalogix. What this means is that for every online campaign, there is a sweet spot of effective frequency that maximizes return on investment, and that the Datalogix tool can help marketers empirically isolate that sweet spot for each brand and campaign. Michael, we need to hire those guys, I guess.
Yeah.
Sounds like they got it all figured out. One final bit of news, guys. Microsoft's holiday pop-up stores will open for the Surface launch on October the 26th. Microsoft's 32 new pop-up stores will all open on October 26th, just in time for the company's Surface tablet launch. The software maker shared a list of the stores last month with no opening dates, but now Microsoft's official store site lists all the opening dates as October 26th. We can't wait for you to take home Surface, says Microsoft. You'll find it and a curated selection of the latest Microsoft products at any of our holiday stores. Now, although Microsoft has not officially confirmed pricing or release dates for the Surface tablet, it's widely expected to be launched at a midnight event on October the 25th, making it available in the pop-up stores and Microsoft's official retail stores on October the 26th. Microsoft has been using street art to advertise Surface, opting more recently for traditional ads at Chicago's public train station. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, flashing his own Surface tablet last month in an effort to woo developers into creating Windows 8 apps, remained tight-lipped about pricing, but he did hint that you will probably find one for, somewhere around $300 to maybe $700 or $800. Apparently, that's the sweet spot for pricing. Microsoft has sent invites to members of the press for a Windows 8 launch event on October the 25th. Mine apparently got lost in the mail, where we're expecting to hear a lot more about Surface and the company's holiday pop-up stores. And that is the news as we have it here. Mike, it looks like Mike Reed might be with us today. Hang on, I got an email. Let me double-check it. It's going to come on today. We need to put it off until tomorrow. Okay, I'll send you a heads up tomorrow. For what it's worth, this is from Mike Reed. Six consecutive closes between 1450/1454 before the breakdown last week to 1424. Yesterday's 1451.50 high was, in quotes, revisiting the scene of the crime and my short-term major area. 1430/29 is my key support. 1424/23, low area from last week, is major support if no reversal from under 30. So there you have it, straight from Mr. Mike Reed, without him even being on the radio program today. Michael, it's all yours. Take it away, sir.
All right. All right. I will take it. Not much to talk about today, though, unfortunately.
Make something up.
I will. I'll go through it all.
Bluff your way through it.
Yeah, there's plenty to go through. There's always stuff to show.
It's get just, data. Get data logics on the line. They'll come up with a good story.
Yeah. Yes, we need to get them. All right, everyone should be looking at my screen at the moment. Yes, you are. All right, I'll start the recording. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, October 2nd, 2012. The results this morning, we are flat. We took three trades. All of them were break-even. I'll go through them all in just a few minutes. If you have not taken a trial with us, please go to www.cfrn.net/apply and sign up for the free trial. With the free trial, there is no credit card required. All we need is your name and email address, and you will get access. You'll get an email. In the email, there are links to download everything you see here. You download the charting platform. There's a video that shows you how to do that. Download the charting platform. You will be sent an email with an ID and password. That is good for 2 weeks for DT Pro. You will then be able to download our indicator set. That's also in the video. That is good for 5 business days. And then you will be sent a link to get into the live trading room in the morning. In the live trading room for 2 hours a day for 5 business days, you can ask as many questions as you want, and we'll do our very best to answer them all. And teach you how to use all the indicators and take the trade setups and all that stuff. All right. Again, that's www.cfrn.net/apply. All right. The trades today, you can see right here on the ES. This was the trade that I took this morning. I'll show you what actually happened. 9:36. We were going into a weekly trading zone. I wasn't looking to take long trades while it was going into the zone. Over here, when it pulled back up to the BBC, we had rising bottoms right here, so I didn't take the short trade. It came back down and hit the BBC right here, again going into the zone. I wasn't interested in that trade. It pulled up over here. Now, this was an okay trade for me. I went short. I was actually a little late getting into it. I missed it because I was going over a Russell trade at the time, the initial entry, but it was still okay to take the trade. I got in where I should have gotten in at 1438.75 is where I actually entered. And pulled against me about 3 or 4 ticks, and it went toward the profit target, 5 ticks. I moved my stop to break even once we closed below the MA1, and it had gone a point, minimum point, in favor of the trade. It came back up and stopped me out. You can see if I'd have stayed in it longer, it drew down to 1440, which would have been 5 ticks. I had an 8-tick stop, and then it worked its way down into the weekly trading zone. So it would have worked out had I not been aggressive with my risk management, but you know what? I had to be aggressive with my risk management. We had this period right here was very choppy. And you can see this period right here was very choppy. Any period, I mean, any movement was followed by a very choppy period today. So I was actually considering taking 1 point when I had it, but I didn't. That was all there was on the ES this morning, okay? Over here on the NQ, I don't think I took any trades on the NQ this morning. There were a few that set up. Again, not as many as we normally see. But let's see. We'll start here at 9:30. It dropped right through the BBC and through the yellow line, pulled back up over here. There was a test of the BBC with a down close here, but the cycle was moving up. Now, let me just tell you what the actual setup is so you understand what you're looking for. I'll show it over here. You look for a bearish cross, in this case, of the MA1 below the BBC. The MA1 is this little blue and red line. The BBC is the green line. You look for that, then price is going to come back up toward the BBC, which stands for bull bear cross, and look for some resistance, a resistance area. Now, when it's doing that, you want to look down here and see divergence between this green line and the cycle portion right here. All right, if you have that divergence, it indicates that it's a short-term pullback. It's just looking for an area of resistance. And once it finds that resistance and closes, in this case down, that's where you get in. So right there would have been the spot to enter for that move down. All right. Now, on the opposite direction, right over here, you had a bullish cross and a pullback and test of the BBC here with an up close and bullish divergence down here. Okay, so right there would have been the spot to go long. I was watching these right here. They hadn't touched the BBC, so I didn't take any of them. And then when this one happened, I missed it, and I was looking at something else. You wouldn't have taken this, even though it looks like it worked out pretty well, because the cycle was moving up, the divergence was going away. All right. I highlighted this little spot right here because this was a momentum trade. For those of you guys who are partners, you know what I'm talking about when I mention a momentum trade. There was opportunity right there to get in and take that. Right here, you had a pullback and test to the BBC with an up close. There was some bullish divergence in here, right there. Okay, not the best bullish divergence because the cycle portion was not overbought. It was kind of in the middle. But anyway, it gave, you know, gave a little bit of movement up, about six ticks before it finally turned around. There was an opportunity to short over here. Now, not the best opportunity because the cycle's going against it, but it, you know, it was there. Let's see, looking through quickly here, we had, this is going the wrong way, we had a bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close, going right into the yellow line right there. That was at 11:44, that was during the break. Just looking for some other ones in here. Anyway, that was the NQ. Alright. Now, what I would like everybody to understand here is that as I switch from market to market, all these four tick range charts, the setups are all the same. Okay, the setups are exactly the same. Hang on. Yes. You working on a response? Excellent. The setups are all the same over there. Let me quickly just look at, Frank, for your benefit. We'll look at the 30-minute. All right, we came down right here, tested the yellow line, gave a very bullish candle right here with the up close, that big wick on the bottom. The next candle moved all the way up to the next zone and then bounced all the way back down off it. All right, so that's the way it all transpired. It went zone to zone this morning on the 30-minute. If we drop it down to 15, you can see up here when it went up to the zone, it was also with the yellow line suggesting it was going to move down. And if we flip to a 5-minute, you can see it bouncing off the yellow brick road right here. Well, bounced off it here. What time was this one? This was pre-market. Once the market opened up, it bounced off it right here for a big move down. All right. Good. Excellent. We have the target in sight. All right. Here we go. NQ, we covered. The ES on a larger time frame, we covered. The YM, we didn't take any trades on the YM either. All for the same reasons we didn't take trades on the ES. It was either going into a zone or it was coming away from a zone or it had double bottoms or higher lows, like right here. We had higher bottoms and a double bottom right here and then a higher bottom right here. So I didn't go short here. I didn't go long on this one because the ES was going into a zone. I didn't go short over here because we had the higher lows right here again. All right. You can see it bounced off the yellow pretty well right there. But I didn't take that trade. That was right about the end of the morning session right in here. All right, let's jump over here to the crude oil. All right, I took a couple of trades on crude this morning, both of them break even. There were more opportunities. You can see all these circles. Now, the setups are exactly the same. You're looking for the bearish cross to pull back up, tested the BBC with a down close with the bearish divergence, okay? It's always the same on these four tick range charts. I got short in here, and after all this up and down business right here, I finally got out over here. I just took a break even exit right here, and then of course, then it tanked as soon as I took the exit. There was another opportunity right in here to go short off the yellow line. I didn't take that one. I did take a short over here after it had dropped through the yellow line and pulled back up to the BBC right here. I shorted it right here, and I ended up taking a break even on that one as well. Okay, it then pulled up to the yellow line again right here. And when it pulls up to the yellow line and you have divergence, and I'll point one other thing out about this yellow line business. When it pulls up to the yellow line and the MA1 in this particular case is below the BBC when it hits the yellow line, that is more often than not, going to give you at least one bar's profit in the trade. Much more often than not. Okay. I could point that out probably 50 times this morning between all the markets. So you had that big move down there. Over here you had a bullish cross test of the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence right there. Okay. And you had it again over here. All right. Those were all opportunities on the crude. And you know, right now it's got bearish divergence and it's hitting the yellow line. The MA1 is below the BBC, so it's not looking so great. But right here during the break, there was an opportunity right there, an opportunity there, an opportunity here. Let's see. And an opportunity in here. All right, this one might have stopped you out with 8 ticks risk. Right now, we have a bearish cross. It's testing the BBC. We actually, a down close on this bar would be a short. Okay, even though it's going right into the yellow line. Or what you could have done on a trade like this when things seem to be going in when things seem to be going in opposite directions here is fade it off the yellow line into the green line, short the green line, back down the way that you normally would. All right. On the 4 tick. The 4 tick was right here. Okay, I didn't go off the yellow line on the ES. I didn't show that this morning. The pullback up to the yellow line was right here. This was actually the second one. The first one was right here, and it dropped right through it. Okay, the second one was right here, and again, you see the MA1 is below the BBC on the pullback up to the yellow line. And that gave a nice move down. All right, the second one was right over here. Again, the MA1 below the BBC for the nice move down. This one over here where it just hit it, the MA1, again, it was right on top of the BBC, pretty much below it, but it's still, you can see right here it's moving down. Okay, so there's one right there, one right in here. It didn't actually hit it right there. It was pretty close. And one right over there. Okay, just off the yellow line. Let's see, I didn't do the Russell. Let me go over the Russell. Okay. What time is it? 12:34. Alright, the Russell had some nice moves this morning on the 4 tick range. The first one was up here. This bounce off the yellow line, it went zone to zone here, which was about 6 points, I believe, right? But it pulled up here and it hit the yellow line, gave a down close. It also hit the weekly trading zone at the same time. I pointed that out in the live trading room. And if you look at this, the MA1 is below the BBC on this pullback. I pointed that out in the live trading room this morning, too, when it was happening. And there was a nice big move down off of that. Okay. Over here, there was no other opportunity to short, really, off the BBC. Right in here, there was, but the best trades that you're going to get on the Russell off the BBC are going to be like this one right here, where the MA1 is still red, the cycle is red, you get your pullback, and everything stays red during the pullback and the down close. Those are going to be your best trades on the Russell. There was one there and this one over here. It turned blue, the MA1 turned blue, but the cycle was still red and headed down. Let's see, right in here, there was a little difficult area. It tested the BBC and it didn't go anywhere, so you would have stopped out of this first one. If you took it off the yellow line right here, again, the MA1 in this case was above the BBC. I said it will almost always give you one full bar's worth of profit, and that's exactly what this one did. It gave one full bar's worth of profit, and then it turned around. Let's see, over here, I didn't take these trades as they were going into the weekly trading zone right here, but it had a bullish cross, and I pointed out it has a bullish cross. It pulled back down to the BBC right here. Now, this was one of those cases where everything was blue. The MA1 was still blue. The cycle was still blue on the pullback and the up close. Okay, so it had a nice move up right there. Let's see, pulled back here. We just had nice divergence. That wasn't an A-grade trade right there, but it worked out pretty well. And I believe that's all I looked at this morning. Over here, this pullback, the MA1 was on the other side of the BBC. So we're pulled back to the yellow line right here, going right into the weekly trading zone. There's no way I would have taken that. And since then, you can see it's bounced off the BBC a couple times up to the zone and back and forth here a little bit inside the weekly trading zone. Right now we have a bearish cross. It's got bearish divergence. If it pulls up and tests the BBC, a down close off of that would be a spot to short. Okay. Now, that's crude. I didn't do anything with gold this morning either. You know what? I'll just let it go. It's all the same stuff on gold. All right. I didn't take any trades on gold this morning. All right. Let me see. Bert's here. David's here. All right. So that's it. If anybody has any questions, you can email us at support@cfrn.net. you can email us at support@cfrn.net. And you can always call us as well. All right. Leave a voicemail. We'll get back to you. And that's it. Gonna wrap it up. Recording is off.
All right, Michael, thank you very much. And, guys, just a reminder that purchasing an indicator from a website, now there's a lot of websites and there's a lot of indicators, some good, some not so good, but there is a huge difference between purchasing an indicator from a website and learning how to trade. Two entirely different things, as different as night and day. I say that because sometimes you see attractive ads or emails or websites where for the low, low price of, I don't know, $97, you can own this thing that's going to make all your dreams come true. Now, this is probably the part where I discourage you from spending the $97 to buy that indicator, right? Nope, not going to do it. In fact, I'm going to encourage you to buy the $97 indicator because you're going to do something, you're going to, you know, and so that's probably the least damage you'll do to yourself. But you can then know that whatever your experience is with that thing, whatever it is, okay, good or bad, that will replay itself out again and again, no matter how much you spend, whether you spend, you know, 97 or 970 or 9,700 or $1 million. Okay. If you're just buying an indicator from a website, that then you're getting what you pay for. Okay. And I'm not even saying that the indicator is not good. It might be very, very good, and you might be able to use it to make money. Okay. But there is a difference between just buying an indicator and taking a class, taking a course where you actually learn how to trade, where you ultimately become your own guru, where you end up not needing someone else to tell you, you know, when to get in or get out of a trade, but you're actually able to analyze, assess the market, and make an informed decision as to what's best for you. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't still utilize an advisory service or someone who's been in the markets for a long time, and they can kind of coach you, or, you know, they can be there on the sidelines telling you where they, you know, just like I did when I went over Mike Reed's stuff a few minutes ago, the areas that are important for him. He's been at this for a very, very long time. He's very good at what he does. Those numbers are important numbers. And so to have that kind of information is very beneficial. When David comes on the show in a moment here, he'll go over prices and areas on different markets that are important to him. He has many years of experience in the market as well. So do I pay attention to those numbers? You bet I do. Do I keep an eye on them? Do I work with them? Do I see how that lines up with what I'm doing? Sure. It would be silly for me not to, right? However, I go back to what I was saying is that however, whether you do it with CFRN as a partner or any other method, you really need to learn how to trade. Now, for you, that might be going to the library, getting a bunch of trading books on basic technical analysis, and you just sit down and you study and you read and you practice. I mean, that might be how you learn. I'm not saying the only way you can learn is to come be a partner. I'm saying come and be a partner is one way of learning how to trade. But do not fool yourself into thinking that you can get through this, that you can become a successful trader by simply buying an indicator on a website. At some point, somewhere along the way, you're going to have to learn how to trade, or you're going to have to walk away. Okay? The right to call yourself a trader, it's a very exclusive club, and you cannot, I'm going to say it again, you cannot buy your way into that club. I don't care how much you spend. You cannot buy your way into that club. You must earn the title of trader. How do you earn the title of trader? It's very simple. You learn how to trade. Don't go away. We'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com, along with Miss Robin. Robin won't be with us today, the trading coach, but she does have a webinar coming up, and I will put the link in the chat room here in just a moment, so those of you that want to attend can get yourselves signed up. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And good morning, Michael, as well. And good morning, everyone.
Good morning, David.
And good morning, Robin, even though she's not with us today. Robin Dane, the trading coach. It's been a pleasure to have her on the program. You know, it's funny, isn't it? Over the years, we've had a number of people on this program. You have, Dwayne, had a number of people on the program that, some of them are just part-time guests that come on for a period of time when their business allows them to, and others, hopefully like Robin, are going to be around for a while, which, you know, these types of people in every area of life now, people have seen the value of having a coach in life. There are things such as life coaches, people who are helping you to stay on track in your whole life, and I'm a real fan one way or the other, of staying on track in your life, keeping the all the plates spinning, staying ahead of all your obligations, allowing for creative living, because you're not going to be real creative when you're tied down by everything that's left undone in your life. And so that's one of the things that I have mentioned many times, because it's been so valuable to me, which is to catch up on everything in your life and to stop thinking about the things, here's a better way of putting it, maybe start thinking about the things that you don't like to do. You know, it's like when you hear people talk about their job and they say, well, I got to go to work, I got to go do this, I got to go do that. And it's obvious that that work, thank you, you shut that, that work to them is not something they're happy about. And so that's the bad, and the good is their free time. So they're not going to do a real good job necessarily at work because they don't really particularly like their job. What I'm suggesting is that you flip around, or at least experiment with the idea of flipping around your whole view, which is that a good life is a life where you just get to do whatever you want. That's, everyone thinks that way. Whatever I want to do, I just get to do that, and I don't have to worry about making money. I don't have to go to a job. That's the good life. I'm suggesting you flip that around, and the good life is having fun taking responsibility
on. That's the good life. The good life is going and getting all those things taken care of, doing a good job at your job. The good life is taking care of the things that need to be taken care of right as they come up. There's nothing that gets put off as best as you can. That's actually the enjoyment to you. And then you'll find that when you've accomplished those things, your free time is absolutely wonderful, and your life takes on a new kind of creative impulse because you're no longer constantly, in a sense, running from your own responsibilities. You've turned right around and taken them on, and not only taken them on, now you actually are enjoying taking care of your life, taking care of your corner, brightening the corner where you are, and the brightening takes place by you just one by one going through those things and just taking care of them. All the way down to the socks on the floor. You walk by them and you see them, you just pick them up, you just put them right in the laundry thingy. And all the way down to that. And before you know it, you are living a very powerful and creative life because these things are no longer something that you're running from. You're actually enjoying taking on the responsibility and completing it and dispersing it and being done with it. It's amazing. It has to be experienced, though, individually. It's hard to put it into words, but what this does is it somehow allows you to live much more creatively. It somehow allows you to see out into the future, so to speak, and be able to move from where you were tied up with all these webs of things that have wrapped you up, these undone, unfinished, uncompleted things, and now those webs are no longer there, and you can really move out. You can still stay responsible. You still are doing and still enjoying your responsibility. Imagine that, enjoying responsibility. And this is biblical, by the way. This is being a good steward, but it's not being a good steward because somebody told you to, or somebody guilted you into it, or that you feel that you're not going to get some special reward later unless you do it. That's the worst reason to do something. That's the very worst reason to do something, because you need some reward to do it. You'll find you can actually enjoy being responsible. You can actually enjoy taking on and completing these things. You'll make lists. You'll have a little list. You go, I'm going to get these things done. I'm going to go right now, and I know what it's like. I've been on both sides of this fence, and I think many of you may have as well. But I'm suggesting you really take it and really run with it and see for yourself how this opens up for you in a way that can't be described in advance because it's different for everyone, but it shows you what it feels like to not be encumbered by your own, quote-unquote, karmically unfinished things. You know, all these things that are unfinished are tying you down, and you're still running from them, and we all do this, and you still want your free time, but you only want your free time because you're running. How much can you enjoy your free time when you're really running from things? You can't really enjoy your free time. You say you are, but you're really not, because you know when it's all done, you're going to have to get back and just barely finish. You know, I've been at points in my life where in order to get me to do something, they had to drag me to the edge of a large abyss and threaten to push me over before that would be the only thing that would get me to do, that's how I was dealing with my life. As things came up, they just stacked up, and then finally, when the black helicopters were about to land and take me away, finally, okay, well, I'll get that done, then I'd finish that project. And I found out later that the very thing that you finally say, I'm sorry, but what the hell am I running from here? What is keeping me on the boil running from all these things in my life? And in a very original, for each individual, very original act, you turn right around and you look to see what it is you're running from. And you find out that there's just nothing there frightening at all. But as long as you're running, it seems like there's something there scary, like walking upstairs in a narrow stairway and it feels like there's somebody behind you that's going to grab you. There's nobody there, but the fact that you're not looking behind you makes it, bigger. It's like that, and I had that experience in my life. I turned around and, I can't describe it. You look to see what it is you're running from, and there's nothing there. The whole thing is a stage production that you have put on in your mind, I've put on in my mind, and this thing has been operating unquestioned for a long time in many, many people. I'm simply suggesting that you are going to love being responsible. You're going to love being a good steward. You're going to love taking on responsibilities and discharging them and keeping brightening the corner where you are. And the reward for that, forget any reward later down the line, the reward for that immediately is for you to feel wonderful, open-ended, creative. You can see into the future, so to speak. In other words, you can see yourself being able to do anything you want to be able to do simply because these other things are no longer tying you down. And you can see, just like out here in Las Vegas, I joke a lot because when you go into the casinos, you see the people gambling, and they never look happy. You know, they're sitting at the machine and, you know, just pulling the handles. And, you know, I don't expect people to be sitting there and smiling all the time. But they're gambling. They're not having a good time. Well, that's a lot of people are like that in life. They're just walking around. They're not happy when they have their free time because they really know they have unsolved obligations. They're not happy when they're forced to do those obligations. They're not happy at all. So my suggestion is fall in love with being responsible for your world, for your part, and clean it up step by step, one little bit here, one little bit there. You'll stumble just like we all do through things. And I'm telling you, in the end, you'll start to catch that feeling and that inspiration that comes from having taken it. You can't have somebody else do it for you. That's the thing. It doesn't work unless you actually do it for yourself. You're both the witness of this and the actor on the stage, you know, taking care of it. It really makes a huge difference. I encourage everybody who, you know, if I was going to be a coach to somebody, one of the first things I would tell them to do is what I'm saying right now, which is to take care of your life and all the little things that have to be done, even the most mundane things. When you clean them up, it's a wonderful thing. It opens you up and you'll never regret it. This is something that you will not regret. And in the end, you end up being in love with being responsible, not as a show to other people, but because of what it does for you individually. And as opposed to doing something, you know, quote unquote, to be seen of men, you know, to use a Bible phrase. You're just doing this because you found out that it's good for you and that it actually makes a difference for you. And the difference may or may not be seen by others. It really makes no difference at all. But I'm pretty sure others will see the difference when you start to really think in those terms. And again, instead of thinking about how to get away from these things and how good it's going to be when you have that extra hour to watch your favorite TV or whatever it is, that you are not really enjoying that free time anyway because you haven't really taken on the remainder, all the way down to the socks on the floor. Little by little, use every day just to kind of climb back up. Before you know it, you're going to say, I am really way above where I was before. And funny thing is that when you get up there, every new step you take gives you new energy to now take the next step. That's another biblical phrase, the rich get richer. And that means that as you move closer to self-responsibility and these kind of cleaner and higher states, you actually are given more energy to take the next step in that direction. And it works out wonderfully. I hope everybody sees that, and I know there are some people who are already that way, but obviously, you know, you take this or leave this if this is something that applies to you. It certainly applies to me. I've been through this. I've spent a very big portion of my life trying to run from a monster that really was never there, only in my mind, and found out that I really love being responsible, and I fall more in love with it for the simple fact that it allows you to be creative. It allows you to feel differently about your day. And when you feel differently, your day is different. It's wonderful. It's hard to describe, but it's very individual and personal with everybody. So there you go. I don't know how we got on that, but obviously it means a lot to me. So,
well, I mean, if you're asking, you came on, you said good morning, and you just started talking about it.
Well, you started it by asking me to come on.
Well, okay. All right. Fair enough.
All right. Okay, so let's see. So we
Ben,
have...
Hey, hang on 1 second. Ben, speaking of guests, you started out talking about many guests on the show. And hey, Ben, if you're there, you need to just speak up, buddy, because otherwise I can't see you. So he hasn't dinged my phone, but he sent me an email, so... All right, Ben. Just pausing for a moment to give you a chance, because he always hates to break in. But
yeah, no, and I know, and with me it's going to be difficult.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so moving right along. Hey, big news in the world of large companies. Google has, as of yesterday's closing price, Google surpassed Microsoft to become the world's second largest technology company.
Wow.
So Apple's in first place, Google's in second place, and Microsoft is now in third place. And that's, you know, Microsoft pretty much ruled the world there for a good period of time. And then Apple came from way behind. I mean, Apple in 2000, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not looking at a chart, I'm doing this from memory. But if I'm not mistaken, in 2002, Apple stock was trading at about $18 a share. Somebody in the room will give me the correct number, but I mean, it's been quite a dramatic move that we've seen. So, Microsoft.
Oh yeah, no, there's no question.
Windows 8 coming out. Windows 8. People who've beta tested it aren't so sold on it. The thing is that there was a time, and I talked about this earlier in the show. I could travel anywhere in the world, and whether I was in a retail environment or a hotel or a restaurant or even in someone's office, a realtor's office or whatever it was, if they were tippy-tapping on a keyboard, if I leaned over and looked at the screen, no matter what program they might be using, whether it was an accounting program or they were writing a letter or they were ringing up my purchase, it was running on the Windows platform. I mean, no matter where you went in the world, the world ran on Windows. Now, that is changing as more and more of the workload is sent up to the cloud. And things are not, you know, necessarily performed in the way that we used to do it. So, just because... now, with the Surface, Microsoft has an opportunity to recapture some of the market share, but they're a little bit stuck in their ways to a degree. Microsoft Windows 7 was okay, not such a big hit. Their really big hit of all time was XP, I think. Some people really love 7. Those who've used 8 just say it's kind of weird. I don't know. I've not used it myself, but we'll see what happens. So, but those are the three titans of tech. Apple, number one, Google, number two, and now Microsoft slipping into third place. So that's it. That's all I got. What do you want to talk about? Really? Okay. Very good. All right. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, David.
No, you're welcome. Sorry about that. I don't know how I did that. We have the presidential debates coming up tomorrow, which should be interesting. At the very least, I know that probably 50 million people will be watching to see how this plays out. Mitt Romney has a real chance. I hope he takes it. I hope he's more than a statistician in front of people. That's one of the things that I've complained about or has bothered me with regard to how he comes across. He needs to counter Barack Obama's passion and Barack Obama's stature and a lot of the things that Barack Obama has in the world of charisma and in his overall expression. He needs to counter that with not only powerful points, but also with some passion. I think people would like to see passion out of Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney seems to be sanguine or whatever that word is, where, you know, he's kind of a he's a pleasant, easygoing guy. He's probably brilliant. I mean, all he's done with his life is just create and live the American dream. If you believe in capitalism at its root core, he started with very little, and he developed many business ideas and made a lot of right decisions. And didn't let his success crash him and all that, and continued on and continued to make right decisions, which is difficult to do. And he pulled it off and he did it. He knows a lot about business. He knows a lot about taking entities, companies that are businesses that are not doing well, and turning them around, doing the right things for the business. And, you know, now he's got a shot at being president of the United States. And, you know, for those of us who like the idea of switching, you know, into a different person, in this case it would be Mitt Romney, the fact is that people who have come to the government under the guise of having done well in business have not done well. This does not have a good history, if history means anything. People who say that, who are businessmen, who say, I'm going to take those business ideas and principles and apply them to the government, that has not worked well in my lifetime. I'm 55, and I've not seen it work even once. There is something about being political or politics and having likability that's vastly more important than the skill set that you bring to the political job. For whatever reason, that's just how it's always been. Political positions have practically nothing to do, apparently, with skill set and background. They have to do more with likability, charm, charisma, believability, those kinds of things. And Mitt Romney does have some believability. He has very little, for me, he has very little charisma. And again, I don't want him to just answer questions in a statistical way. I want him to kick some butt, to be quite blunt. I want him to get up there and I want him to hold President Obama accountable for everything he said he thought he was going to do and didn't do. I want him to hold him accountable for the things that he did do that didn't work out. I want him to pin him down on his never-ending excuse that however long it takes this economy to get back on its feet, that's just more proof of how deep the recession was and how it wasn't his fault. When in actuality, the longer it takes, the more proof it is that he doesn't know what to do. I want somebody to grab the president by the neck and hold him responsible for his actions for the last 4 years. That's what I'd like to see in this debate, verbally speaking, of course. I'd like to see Mitt Romney take him on head on head. And I got to say, I don't think he has anything to lose at this point. Obviously, you have to treat the president and the office with respect, but you can treat people with respect and still kick their butt. You can do it, and it looks, and it can be really done well. Actually, Reagan, actually, I think, did that very well in his second debate many, many years ago. He did a marvelous job of doing that. I don't have all the lines in my head, but you know, his way of handling things. But that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the president held accountable because he doesn't hold himself accountable. I'd like to see him held accountable for his, you know, worthless foreign policy, for apologizing for America's greatness, for, you know, the list is endless. I mean, I don't want to get into it all, but I'd like to see somebody finally hold him accountable. And if I was Mitt Romney's advisor, I would say, listen, this is the make or break right here. You might as well go for it and really show who you are here. And, or if you're, you know, make yourself known on this stage. If it crashes and burns, this was, you had to do this at some point because, you know, the president has a very high likability, high charisma, et cetera, and has a high chance of winning his presidency back. And so I think Mitt Romney, this is it. This really, tomorrow night, is the final chance for Mitt Romney, in my opinion. If he does get up there, and if he does show the American people that he has passion, that he believes in his position, that he's not just statistically telling us how things went, and he's really holding the president responsible in front of us in a debate format for his actions and pinning him down, I think a lot of people would feel, the people that haven't made their decision yet, whatever number of people that is, it could make a difference. It could give him a real chance. I don't think he has anything to lose by doing that. And if I was his advisor, I would tell him that. Just get it right and get it on. You know, don't worry that you're, you know, I mean, this is a man that would have trouble disrespecting the president even in his most heated moments. So we don't have to worry too much about that. You still have to show the proper respect, but in a good debate format, I think Mitt Romney actually has the lead in coming into this in terms of his ability to debate, manage facts, et cetera. Obama is not as skilled at this. What Obama is very skilled at doing is striking poses, speaking rhetorically about his vision. You know, he has a very charismatic way of handling himself, and that's his power. If Mitt Romney can rise up and really show some steam here, do really hold President Obama and the administration accountable for all of the things that have gone on, I think we have he would have a real potential shot. So it should be interesting, and I hope everybody watches it. I'm sure most people will be, because we're coming to a point in our country here where we are just, you know, like these markets that are running the golds, the silvers, the, you know, et cetera, they're just shot up. Well, that's what's happening to America's debt. And I honestly don't believe that this administration cares one bit about our debt. They care about, you know, deploying their vision for America, whatever the hell that vision is, which I'm still not even sure, except that I know it has a lot to do with, you know, in a sense, punishing the successful and making sure that other countries, that we coddle other countries who want to kill all of us. Those types of visions. I don't know what it is about this president that he seems completely disconnected or unable to deal with the way he processes reality. He will not allow himself to this day to call terrorism terrorism. Something about that word, they changed it at some point. They called it human events, or I can't remember what it was. To this day, they just have a really tough time looking at these events that happen in the Middle East as terrorism, and looking at these events that happen here as terrorism. They just refuse. They remember when they wanted to bring the guys into regular court down into New York, and they changed the name of terrorism to something else. I mean, this is the emperor has no clothes all over again. What were we going to say, Duane? Do you have something there?
Nope.
Oh. So anyway, that should be interesting. Looking forward to seeing that, and I'm looking forward to seeing Mitt Romney. Even if he doesn't win the election, I'd like to see somebody give the president a verbal punch and let the guy deal with it. I've never seen the president, somehow he has avoided through this whole 4 years, standing in line with somebody who knows the facts and can deal the facts out and hold him accountable for what, you know, for the things that he's done. Has he done some good things? Maybe, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, certainly getting Osama bin Laden was a good thing. But at this point, you know, the stats are that the recession really ended in 2009 by the stats. And we just had one of the lowest GDP figures last month, which could indicate that the economy is actually getting ready for another move down. I don't know. I'm not an economist, but I do know this. The numbers are not good in any area. And the longer this goes on, all we get from this administration is more excuses. Well, yeah, that's just as because it was a lot bigger than we thought it was, this downturn. Well, you can be saying that for the next 20 years if you want to, and that still is an excuse, and that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to say. If 4 more years goes by and we don't have any improvement, that's what they'll be saying. Well, yeah, it was a lot bigger than any of us thought at the time, and so we've done the best we can, but, you know, it was really big. You know, the downturn from Bush, you know, it was very big. That's what they're going to say. You know what? You can give incompetence 30 years and they can't finish something. But competence will do something with what's going on here. I don't buy the fact that you can't do anything. And I don't buy the fact that you have to continue wasting money and taxing people in this position, that there's smarter things for the government to do than run around doing what this government's doing. I think there's better for us than this. That's what I think. Thank you for your time and attention. All right. want to get onto the markets here? Oh, one other thing. Duane, do you have that little picture I want to put up?
I do, David, and I will I'll put it up for you.
I appreciate that. I just wanted to show this. I do this from time to time for those of you who have been on the program for a while. It's just a little playful thing.
There you go.
I don't see it here yet.
I got to close something down. Let's see, what's it going
to be? Okay, while he's getting that, some of you, I know all of you, know that, you know, I'm driving a Chevy Volt, and I'm really loving it. It's amazing. Everyone who has one loves it. It has the highest satisfaction of any car ever. How do you like that? Any car ever. Think of all the Porsches, the Ferraris, the Maseratis, the Rolls Royces, you name it. The lowly Chevy Volt has the highest customer satisfaction of any car. J.D. Powers and Associates. Now, why? What is it about that car that is making people so happy? Well, go drive one. Put it in sport mode. Make sure it has the charge on the electric, and go drive it, and you'll start getting the feel for it. I still don't see it there, Dwayne.
I haven't put it up yet.
Oh, okay. Well, you continue on that, and I'll talk. He's working on it. Anyway, so I leased
one.
Trying
to build the suspense for you.
Oh, thank you. That's very good. I leased one in January of this year. I was looking for a car for my daughter, and I got news for you. My daughter wouldn't have taken a car that I bought if I would have bought or leased for her anyway, because she's very independent. But I was looking to see what she might like, and I was intrigued with the hybrids and the electrics, and I ended up taking a drive in the Volt, and I was so impressed by it, I got it for myself. And I'm just as impressed today, literally 10 months later, as I was on day one. It's just, you know, it's fabulous. This is the dash on one of the, it has two screens on it. And you can see that it has a battery, that the green thing on the left there, that shows that I have 39 miles left in today's driving, 39 miles of pure electric driving. No gasoline, no tailpipe, no emissions. It started out at about 45, and I drove from my home, which is about 9 miles, but on this it only registered about 7 of those 9 miles because I drove lightly, and so it has 39 miles left. But in the middle, you can see where it has the total mileage on the car, 11,236 miles. That's how many miles I put on it, 11,236. And under that, it has that little gas tank, and it says used. You can see that number is 10.4. I've burned 10.4 gallons of gas to go 11,236 miles. Let's see, 11,236 divided by 10.4. That works out to about 1,080 miles per gallon. That beats the Prius pretty good. Under that, it shows 250 miles per gallon. That has a plus after it because the computer won't go any further than 250 miles per gallon in its calculation. So there you are. Now, if I do run out, if a person runs out of that green electric on the left-hand side there, you run out of that, you won't even know it, but your gas generator turns on, and you can just go drive another. See that little 242 right above the word ready? That's 242 miles. Once I run out of the 39 miles of electric, I can go 242 more miles on the gasoline generator. So you're not going to be stranded on the side of the road. You can zip anywhere you want to go, and so on. Oh, there you are. The president won't say the word terrorist and other right-wing spin. Well, he certainly hasn't called, just as an example, he certainly hasn't called the Libyan attack on the consulate there, or the embassy there, terrorist. He hasn't come out and said that yet. He still is talking about the movie. He has a problem with that. He has a problem digesting certain types of events. He's the one who came up. It's his administration that came up with the term human, you know, whatever it was. I forgot. Do you know, remember what that phrase was?
Man-made something.
Man-made disasters or something like that.
That was Hillary.
Yeah, what was the purpose of that?
Yeah,
just
I don't
to anyway. Not call something what it is.
Yeah. Anyway,
the emperor has
the
no
point
place.
This guy's making with this article is that in this address right here, he uses the term 6 times. So it's that same thing
okay.
We talk about all the time about how the right sinks their teeth into something and won't let
right.
go like a rabid dog, just like the left sinks their teeth into something like a rabid dog and won't let go. And
well,
so
I've never seen an administration have to come
balance.
Up with new phrases to call something that's always been called terrorism.
Well, he uses the term terrorism 6 times in this address.
And what is this? What is this address?
This is, I'm running. I could play it for you, but I got it.
Well, I'm just wondering, what is he addressing? When was this? What's he talking about? Was it, you know, who knows what this is?
Let's see what comes up on the screen. Your weekly address, January 2nd, 2010.
Oh, 2010. What about something current?
Well, I mean, again, you want to? I'm just saying.
Yeah, I got you.
Someone in the audience
up,
said, you know, people always go, the president never says a word, terrorist. And I know exactly what you're talking about, but
yeah.
We always say that we give the audience, you know,
a fair
shake,
right,
if they have a difference in opinion, and they have the guy on tape saying the word terrorist.
I'm not saying
times.
He never says the word terrorism. I'm saying that he, I know you're in agreement with this, I'm saying that he fights shy of calling acts of terror, terror. He will use the word terrorism, but he has not yet even called verbally out of his own mouth in the many things that he has said in the last 14 days since this last attack, he has not called it terrorism. Right now, right here, right in front of us, he has not said, this is an act of terrorism. Not only did he not say it, but he sent out a whole bunch of his administration, one of which may end up being fired, I forgot her name, to go on all the TV shows, and immediately, even though they had information that it was terrorism, to say this was just a spontaneous event, even though we now know for an absolute fact that it was not spontaneous, it was totally planned, and the reason they want us to think of it as spontaneous is because this would mean that his whole strategy, his whole belief that he had solved the Muslim, you know, Islamic quote-unquote terror problem, that he had solved it, and he hasn't solved it. And the proof is what's going on in Libya right now with the Al-Qaeda flags flying over our embassies and all that stuff, and people dead. You know, it wasn't all just about a little movie. These people showed up with rocket, you know, grenade launchers and stuff like that. That doesn't just happen spontaneously. And the embassy was attacked from three different sides. The FBI has acknowledged that it was terrorism. The terrorism people have acknowledged it's terrorism, but our president hasn't acknowledged that it's terrorism yet. So he has an issue with it, and yeah, maybe we are dragging that out and beating it up too much. There's plenty more to complain about with this guy and his vision, his world vision for what he wants America to be. You didn't build that, you know, and so on and so on and so on. The hostility he has towards people who have success and have earned the success, the hostility he has towards the whole idea that somebody will rise to their own potential is appalling. It's appalling. It's disgusting is what it is. It's actually disgusting. And yet, he looks really good, has a lot of charisma while he's doing it. So, there you are. All right, let's get on to the markets.
Okay.
Alrighty, so let's take a look at the S&P because the S&P has continued now for a number of days to move down from the completion of some earlier targets that we had in the previous month's contract up at 1475. We expected the market to have a multi-day decline off that, but at the time we were right in the contract rollover. The market has now tested or come very close to testing the 1423 level, which for us was the important number for the most recent reflected wave bottom, which was for September 27th. And that bottom did occur one day early, and we're still in a multi-day advance off of that level. Under normal conditions, we'll see higher prices continue from here. In spite of the fact that we've been going back and forth and choppy for the last few days. But we have gone from 1424 up to the target that we had forecast for the advance off of the September 26 bottom was 1450 to 1452. We mentioned it for several days on the radio here. They did get up to 1450, 150. That's right in the area that we thought that would be important. The market is reacting off of that. But I still believe that higher prices would normally come after this reaction here. We would still end up with higher prices. So longer term, we're still in the same boat as we were, as we've been for months, which is that we think that higher prices are coming. This isn't an outright forecast like a roadmap. So, you know, you have to take it, you know, in the context that it's presented. We believe that the market is likely going to continue higher into next year and continue to advance testing levels like 1515 or higher prior to the ending of the larger advance that began years ago down at the 666 S&P level. Remember when we hit that and it bounced and everybody was saying, ooh, that's 666, you know, that could be really a sign of the times or whatever. But as it turns out, that was just a really, really good bottom for a very powerful advance.
Yeah, George had a question for you yesterday, and I didn't get around to asking it. And I know I've asked you before, and so I'll just, for the benefit of George, let me ask you again. His question is, do you use binary options? Do you trade binary options? And can your information be used to trade binary options? And this is the point where you go, what's that?
A couple things here. First of all, if you're asking me if the information can be used to trade binary options, my answer is I believe it can be, because the options are in some way related to the movement of the S&P, so I don't know why they couldn't be. We actually ourselves, we don't use the binaries, but we trade in the ordinary options on futures. And there's other options that can be used as well. We have people that are in Europe and other areas that utilize, there's a European-style option. And then recently there's new options out, or not that new, but you can have the expiration date will be like every Thursday or Friday. It's like weekly options. I'm not sure if any of you have used those yet. We have not, but I'm considering doing that, because there's a lot of setups where you basically are selling or buying options for a short-term move that go away.
These binaries expire daily, I believe.
Daily, okay. So the answer is, because I'm talking about
George?
The weekly, they're considered very high risk. You know, people who, if you ask your broker about binary options, these are based upon very small price movements that you would have to be correct about. I have no problem telling you that, yes, you could use them, but the way that those work, because they're so short-term, you'd have to have a very short-term forecast and be correct about it. Most of the things that we're talking about now are longer-term pictures, and some of the stuff that we do is shorter-term. We're in a euro trade right now on the long side based upon a relatively shorter-term thing. But in many cases, the binaries are even shorter than that. I mean, they're short in terms of, you know, daily, like Dwayne is saying. So I'm not sure exactly why you might be more interested in binary options, and maybe you could tell me why you're interested in binaries rather than owning the futures outright, or is it maybe a margin issue perhaps?
I don't know. I'll let George answer that since he asked the question. I know myself, I've looked at it. I mean, if you get it right on the option, that would mean you're also going to get it right on the futures.
Futures, right.
And if you get it right on the futures,
you're going to get more.
You're going to make more money than if you get it right on the binary. Now, I realize that with the binary, you can, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not real familiar with this, but I think Nadex is the site that trades binaries. You, instead of going through the whole process of funding an account and, you know, all the paperwork that you have to do, although that has really, in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, that has changed. It used to be like a ream of paper that you had to go through.
Right.
The futures brokers now, that's the Paperwork Reduction Act. You can actually get through the whole process in a very short period of time compared to what it used to be. But I think with like the binary, it's almost like going to an online poker room. You can show up with your credit card, tap in a few numbers, and suddenly you're trading. Mm-hmm. Now, let me see what some of the guys have typed in who are more familiar with it. Let's see. Reg says, no, the binaries are the coolest things I have seen. They operate on the Nadex, have set risk, but not available to Canadians. Risk can be down to less of dollars with hundreds potential gain. well worth your time to investigate. Yeah, but I'm thinking, Reg, in order for that to be true, where you're going to risk very little to make a lot, then it's going to be kind of like, okay, let's see, right now the S&P is at 1435. Yeah, I can probably bet $2 and make $2,000 if the S&P closes over 1454 today. See, that just probably isn't going to happen. Now, I don't know, Reg, but I'll check it out. I mean, I've looked at them before, but they're not available. A lot of stuff's not available to Canadians. I don't know why that is. I think you seem like very nice people to me. But, boy, you guys should get excluded from a lot of stuff.
I wonder what that's all about.
The next comment was, I saw a presentation. This is from Jerry. Jerry says, I saw a presentation where the trader used binaries to hedge a trade short term. Okay, that might be another use of them. Reg is laughing out loud. Okay. George says, David talks of his turning points, and he used to give out market turns on an hourly basis, like in such and such an hour, the market is going to move to such and such a number. So that's
right.
Where George was thinking it might, you know, be beneficial. And Reg says, in regards to the Canadian thing, just get to know us better. We did burn your White House to the ground 1 year. They did?
Okay. I don't remember that one, but...
What's that about, Reg? You're talking about the Revolutionary War, 1812? Oh. Okay, so that's right. You guys still identify with the mothership, don't you? All right. All right. So that's the take, George, on the binary options.
I got it. I got what George was saying, too.
Yes, you could, you know, if you're a Messenger Pro subscriber and you get that type of information throughout the day, could you parlay that into binary trades? I certainly don't see any reason at all why you couldn't.
Right.
But the question that we're asking, is it really the best way of putting your money to you? And for some people, it might be. It might be just a perfect fit. I don't know enough about it to speak intelligently, which...
Yeah, and with...
goes for most things. So,
with regard to that, we do give that some of that information out on Messenger Pro, and with regard to, you know, this hour is important for a bottom, which should advance to such and such a price. We had actually yesterday was a really good example, if I may say so, of it doesn't really matter what the instrument that you would have been using is, but let's say binaries were your thing. Because we did have, in fact, a larger forecast for the market to go to 52, you know, the 1452 off of the daily bottom. And, you know, yesterday we ended up, I mean, this is, for an intraday day for us, it's a big day. We had about a 16-point day. In reality, because we do use two contracts, one of the trades ended up making 3.75 points and the other trade made 8 points on an individual contract basis. So it's more like 12 points. And because our first contract sets get taken off with just a point or so. But my point is, no pun intended, was that we were looking to buy the market because the market was going to bottom in a certain period of time yesterday, and it should go up from there and test or attempt the 52 level. And so that would have been an example. But like Dwayne said, and I really, you know, not having traded those options, maybe they're the perfect instrument for that. If you want, you can check out Messenger Pro and see if that kind of information will be useful to you. And excuse the sales pitch, but it might be valuable for you to consider being at a reflected wave course at some point in the future to be able to help put those kinds of setups together. People also talk, this is an interesting thing, that hidden in the question, you know, well, you can risk a very small amount of money for a very large gain. There's a lot of deceptive self-thinking sometimes in that, like kind of like what Dwayne said, you know, well, yeah, you could bet a very small amount of money and it would go up to such and such a price today and you could make $2,000. And so purely speaking, you could risk a very small amount of money and make a very large gain. But what are the odds of that happening? And strangely enough, and not so strangely, the more you chase the very, very small amount for the very, very large gain type of setup, the more you find that it's somewhat of an illusion. Because, at least for me, because the easier trades, the ones that work out more often, are really not necessarily laid out that way, where you say, we're going to only risk a dollar. I mean, you know, there are setups where you can get a pullback and you buy with a very small risk and you're on your way up to completing a daily top and so on. And so once in a while you get those. But the really good trades aren't the ones that necessarily make the highest return on the instrument. The really good trades are the ones that have the highest probability of doing what you think they're going to do. That's really where the best money is. I mean, however you utilize that information, whether you're using options or not, I guess all I'm saying is don't fool yourself or don't get too carried away with the carnival side of options, which is, gosh, you could have bought this for this much, and look, now the market went to here, and it's worth 10, 20, 30, 40 times what you paid. I'm not real crazy about that because that doesn't really address what the probabilities of the move happening are. It really only addresses what you would make if that move happened. I want to live on the side of the tracks that really chases the probability of the move happening. And we can. You know, I understand your question is based upon the idea that the move would happen, but I'm just warning you to just, if you even need it or not, to not get too excited about the 10, the 20, the 30, and the 40 times your money thing. It will happen to somebody at some point, but the market is really kind of fair, and it really doesn't make those kinds of payouts very often. I mean, when we give trades to Bert, and Bert goes out, Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading goes out, and we might say, you know, buy such and such at, you know, for a move from here to here, and he uses options. I mean, typically we might make 40%, 30%, 70% on an option. You know, I mean, you can ask Bert, I don't know. And, you know, it's his interpretation of our work that he gets him to put the trade on. But we're not seeing those kinds of, you know, 10s and 20s and 30s times your money. And can it be done? Yes. But it takes more and more skill to be able to get to that level where you can really get the huge, huge moves. And the options do have that. And I have to tell you that in spite of the fact that we're primarily option sellers ourselves, that in my, you know, in the history of doing this for many, many years, there have been a number of times where I thought to myself, gosh, you know, we called it really good. We sold some options. We got a limited gain out of this huge move. We would have been much better off buying option premium, which would have gone up X number of percent. And I have seen that on a number of occasions. So I think there are nice moves, and those would be whatever they are, 3, 4, 5, 6 times your money. But I think in the end, I guess I'm just putting out the warning, just don't be too, and I think Dwayne was alluding to it too, don't be too enamored by the super, super low price of the option and the possibility of the, you know, complete triple home run. And I would also want to say this. You're not going to make most of your money that way in your trading career. Most of your money, for the most part, is going to be made simply moving day by day, finding for you what is easy and obvious, the kind of trades that you like to see where it's just, oh, this is good. I'm going to participate in this. I like this. And then getting your piece out of that. And even if it's just a reasonable piece. I really like reasonableness with the market. It seems like the more you try to tweak it and pull on the market, it's harder to get it out of it. It gets tricky. I think just being reasonable over time makes good money as well. And you're always going to hear the story of the guy. Oh, I know this one guy. Or you're going to read it in a book. That's why I tell you to burn all the books. Because they're always there to tease and taunt you into doing what really is the worst thing for you to do. In most cases, it's just like watching TV when you're trading in the markets. I can guarantee you, if you're long the market, the TV, and you're worried about your position, that TV, they're going to be coming out every 5 minutes telling you how the market looks like it's top heavy and it's coming down and whatnot because you're long. You know, I don't know. I've seen it over the years. It's just best to trade from your own light, be a light unto yourself, trade your own ideas, and don't let a bunch of distractions get in there. And it almost gets to be circus and carnival-like with these options, with, you know, how much you could have bought it for and what it turned into and all that. You know, and maybe a few times in your year you're going to be able to get a nice move like that, and that's nice. But I think chasing that ends up being more difficult than trading reasonably and so on.
The
so.
Thing George found attractive is, he says, what I've seen, you are risking a set amount to gain modest returns of 5 to 10% in a short period of time, not looking for home runs, but using turning points for market direction could
Beautiful.
Be very valuable as a return on one's investment.
Absolutely.
So that was George's take. Reg's take says the reward on binaries are variable, as are the risk, but the returns are in the hundreds, which would work out to 3 to 5 times the risk. And you certainly look at the odds.
Mm-hmm. And then George goes on to say, you certainly want to look at the odds of the move happening.
George goes on to say, you don't need huge moves to gain a very decent return in a short period at predetermined risk with set returns. Well, I would say the same thing about futures. As long as you use a stop, you have a predetermined risk. And if you know what your, you know, target is. But again, George says these are not meant for home runs, just looking for singles.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad, George.
And then Skip says, could you ask David if he has a target, either by date or price, on the long euro trade he mentioned a couple of days back?
Yeah, let me go to that right now because we've had some questions about that today as well. It's let me find it just real quick here. The euro trade was based upon, remember, we had this date of the 27th and the 26th, which was very common across a bunch of markets. And the euro and the dollar both had their own dates along that in that way. So let me find the daily chart of the euro here. So what we were talking about was originally that the euro was to bottom on September 27th, and that we would normally expect to see such and such a move. And then the market came down after the 27th and tested the low on the 27th. It did that on October 1st. In doing so, it tested a very important what we call natural level, which was roughly from 128, say, 12, 15 or so, 128.15 down to about 128.10. It tested that level. And on that same day, which we were on the program and said, it would close above the reflected wave bottom of the 27th. And so during that day, the target for us would mean that we were looking for the market to go up to one at or near 130.13. Now, today's high has been 129.79. So, you know, we're still about 33 ticks from it for people who are long off of the original euro trade. So we would expect higher prices. This is, again, these setups require overnight positions, the placement of stops, the management of risk, all of which is a skill that you learn to do. And you, you know, if the market continues up, which it should under normal conditions, will be good. I was a little, to be honest with you, in this particular trade, I'm glad they went down and did the 128.15 level. I was glad to see that. I thought I was a little bit put off by the fact that they did it as a retest of September 27th, the bottom. And the reason why is because to really have gotten me really boiling about this trade, like, oh, yeah, you know, we're in it good now, to really get me good on this trade, I would have preferred to see the 27th itself touch the 128.15 level. That would have been the whole thing was there. That's when I, you know, I'm like jumping up and down. And that happens from time to time. We get these really good types of setups. But in this particular case, the low on the 27th was 128.39. It began to move up, and then on Monday, or what's today? I'm sorry, today's Tuesday. Yesterday, they went down and did the 128.15 and 128.10 level. And so that threw me just a little bit. I wasn't as crazy about it just because, I would have liked to have seen that. It felt like it should have happened on the 27th. Not felt like, but that's really technically where they would have done it. So they waited a day. They went down and got to that number, and now they're shooting off of it. And just that little sachet, in a way, is good because it's tricky behavior, and the market often makes big moves after tricky behavior. So the part of me of being in the trade doesn't like it because, ouch, it hurts that they're doing that, and they kind of, scare you. And then now the move is underway, and I'm much more comfortable. Under normal conditions, we would see a movement up to at least testing or attempting 130.13 in this move up. And we've not gotten really near there quite yet. We've gotten to a high of 129.79. So let's see, 130.13 minus 129.79. So we're 34 ticks away, and we're having a pullback and the usual stuff here. So that's our initial target for this trade. So I hope that's helpful, and we'll talk about it as it continues on. Remember, it's potentially a multi-day type of setup.
Edward had a question. On the euro, is there a move back down after 130.13 typically?
I do want to say that's interesting. He's asking that, and I'm wondering if he's asking that and if he wants to be honest with me, or if he doesn't have to. I'm sorry I've said it that way, but I'm wondering if he's asking that because he's short now or if he's asking that because he wants to short it then. It doesn't matter either way. I'm only curious because sometimes when people ask questions like, are you expecting a move back down, that means that they might be in a short position. And one of the things that I espouse on the program many times is to not hold losing positions for a later completion, even if that later completion is supposed to go down. It's not a good idea as a practice. So just letting you know that it's, has not worked for me over time to do that. It's been better for me to remove a position and take the immediate hit of that right then and there.
Okay.
And then if I have an indication, as we're talking about, and I'll address it in a minute, that we would be going short from there, I would short it from there and do it then.
Here's what Edward says in answer to your question, David. He says, I'm not short right now.
Okay.
I'm just not interested in going long for 30 ticks if
right.
It's just on its way back down from. In other words, he doesn't want to. Well, I mean, I don't know, 30 ticks in the euro, that's
not a bad little trade.
That's not a bad little trade, but if you're someone who, typically goes for a larger, it pays $12.50 per tick, right?
Yeah.
30 times 12.
So 30 times 12. If we all got our little calculator,
yeah,
that's 425.
$375 per contract. So, okay, so what he's asking is he might be interested in this trade if it's going to keep going, but if you think it's going to go to 130.13 and back off, maybe he'll wait and get on board for the next.
Okay, well, here's what I'll tell you. My answer to that question, I'd like to answer it first in two ways. First, in my normal voice.
It's been a while. I'm going to allow you this one.
And then in a sort of a silly, high-pitched whine.
Okay.
It has been a while. Okay, now listen. I don't want you to go long here either, even though I want to tell you I wouldn't be afraid to go long here. Me personally, I would not, because the move's already underway. The move has been confirmed. And strangely enough, some of the best moves happen once the move is already underway, and a lot of traders are uncomfortable doing that. Just saying. On the other hand, I agree with you that it's a small enough move that it might not be worth the risk to do so. Now, having said all of that, I would like to wait until tomorrow, which is October 3rd, and for this market particularly, October 3rd is important. So would you mind saving the question for tomorrow? Because October 3rd is important enough for this market, normally this market would want to go up into October 3rd. That's what the market wants to do. So under normal conditions. So, and I think we're under pretty normal conditions, other than that little sachet they did with the September 27th bottom that we went over. So I like the idea of waiting into October 3rd, which is tomorrow, and let them do what they're going to do. And then we'll talk, and then we'll do two things. We'll be getting out of long positions potentially, and then we'll also be looking at the possibility of a tradable decline from that point forward. So that's what I'd like to do with this, is let them get into the October 3rd, because I was going to mention anyway in my talking about the euro that October 3rd is the next important. That's the date that we would expect this thing to rally into. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. Please remember to ask me, and we'll cover it at that time. And I just want to say again that if you go back over the markets, we all tend to look at the edges, at where turns and things happen. If you go into the market and take some time, my suggestion would be to look at market movements that are already underway, where the cab drivers know the move is underway already. That means that everybody knows, you know, and that it's obvious, like this move. And a lot of people are uncomfortable trading in those conditions because we're all used to trying to get the very edges and then get into it. But a lot of trades that we've taken that have been very powerful and very successful trades for us have been fighting the urge to not trade from the middle and actually trade from the middle. And for some reason, some of those have turned out to be just remarkably easy trades to both enter, hold on to. You know, you're relaxing in your massage chair because it's just so easy. And so just consider that. Take a look at the spots, you know, that you're not normally looking at. Here's a good way to break out of whatever box you're in. Do the opposite of what you're doing right now. Even though what you're doing now might look really comfortable and good to you, and it will, try playing with the opposite. Look around a little bit and try to jump out of the box. You might see something else, and that might help. And for me, that something else was trading from the middle. Many times the options positions that we put on, and by the way, just for giggles, we booked another chunk of our options today in the S&P, and in our next webinar, whether it's for Messenger Pro or the course, we're going to show our most current statement, which we've been showing since April of last year. We started this options statement that trades primarily on reflected wave, not 100%, but primarily on larger reflected wave turning points, and we're putting options on. And that account's, you know, just been creeping up. And I think we're going to be now at about 154,000. And it was just a couple months ago we were at 125. So all we're doing, I'm telling you, it's this easy. All we're doing is basically looking for daily, weekly, or monthly, you know, larger turning points, and then selling option premium, which does require more margin. But if you have it, you can sell premium on individual stocks or on the index, and then letting the position move and work, and just waiting for the market to finally have the move and so on. And what we do, which is a little different than what I used to do, I used to sell the options on the index itself, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. But what I learned over time is that, and this is interesting and it might be something for you to consider, is the S&P is an index, and it's its own tradable, obviously. It's comprised of the 500 stocks, and you can trade the index as an index. But what I found is that if the index is putting in a top and I want to sell a bunch of premium, because I think a bottom, you know, a move down is coming, rather than sell the index premium itself, in other words, rather than selling options against the S&P 500 index, I'm going to go into the index itself and find individual stocks that on themselves are in that similar or same position as the index. And now I'm going to sell a bunch of options on individual stocks for them to go down while the index, I'm forecasting on the index, but I'm actually trading on the individual stocks. And what that does is it actually means that I could be somewhat wrong. I'm allowing myself some leeway. I could be kind of wrong a little bit on the index. And in many cases, many of those stocks are still going to go in my favor, even though the index might not. See? Because those stocks were in their own individual position to go down. The index might have other forces that are keeping it up for longer or maybe pushing it a little bit higher. But many of those stocks will still end up doing what they looked like they were going to do. And so I might be wrong, but I'm not as wrong, if that makes sense, because I have some of that risk spread across individual stocks, as opposed to just simply saying, I'm either going to be right or I'm going to be wrong on the index. See? And so that's been very good for us. We've been doing that for a few years, where we're just saying the index is our leading indicator. We're going to use reflected wave on that, but we're going to find the individual stocks inside there and sell option premium on those. And that is how we made $154,000 in 14 months in that's what the statement's going to show. If we don't have more to show, or maybe less, but because we do take losses on it, you know, it's not perfect. But when you're selling options, it tends to look better over time, primarily because there's a forgiving nature of options in the sense because time decay works in your favor. And you have an opportunity to. It gives you a little leeway that you might not get in a futures position. So we're going to continue to show that. But consider doing that if you're going to sell on the index rather than being directly selling the index itself. Consider taking a little extra work on and looking at the individual stocks that make up the index and find stocks that are in the same position roughly that the index is in and sell options against those. And that spreads your risk. And I can tell you, there's been a number of occasions where the market might have come up and spiked really heavily an important top that we have sold against. And even while that spike was occurring and scaring us on the index, we hadn't sold anything on the index, and many, if not most, of the stocks that we had sold had already moved sideways or lower. So the index was kind of going against the forecast for a little blip, but the stocks themselves were still kind of heading down. And so it's like, wow, you know, we are distributing the risk of this idea across a bunch of stocks. It works out. Check that out. See if that's not a bad way to have some background income coming in while you're trading your futures. And that's what we do. A lot of the stuff we do is either owning the stocks outright, which is just its own trade, and or selling option premium against those stocks, and or what we've done with gold and silver, which is to buy large ETF positions. And the ETF position isn't the actual gold or anything like that, but we've talked about that before. It's basically a piece of paper that says, you know, that you own or could own this many shares of gold. And as the gold goes up, that piece of paper's value tends to go up as well, the ETFs. So exchange traded. And so there you are. And even on the program the other day, Dwayne has complained about those before because there's a possibility that, you know, you don't really own the stuff, that the whole thing could blow up. It's paper that you bought. It's the concept of gold, et cetera. But other things can happen even with gold. And, you know, anything can happen. You know, people are drilling gold out and emptying it out and putting, you know, Hostess Twinkies inside and selling it. So who knows how much of that has happened. But you just have to take your, you know, in life, it's life. You know, you take your best shot and you trade your best stuff. Why not also, and I just want to say this and we'll move on, if somebody told you that you weren't allowed to trade, if somebody really said to you, I'm going to give you an electric shock every time you get it wrong in the market, you know, after a while, you would either stop trading or you would only trade when it was really good. In other words, what would be the reward be? We're going to shock you with electricity if you're wrong, or we're going to, if you're right, we're going to take the electrical shock away for the next five trades. So you have an incentive to trade, but, you know, I'm trying to lay out a scenario here. Well, my point is, again, is that all we do is we just come to the office, we're just looking at markets, and we're just waiting for those opportunities that seem really easy to us, obvious. They don't come up necessarily every day. On shorter term time frames, they do, like with Dwayne's and Michael's stuff, where you might, you know, be watching and see many opportunities that look really good. We're looking for, in many cases, much longer term than that. So it doesn't happen every single day. But that's the idea. We're not really pushing anything. We're just kind of looking around. It's almost like, you know, you're at a garage sale and you're just walking around. You're not really, you know, it's just a normal, nice little day. You've had your morning tea and you're at a garage sale across the street and you see something and you realize that might be something valuable. And, you know what, I'm going to spend $250 on this. I'm going to find out what this is. And you take it and it turns out to be something really valuable. And it's just like that. It's kind of like we're just kind of just looking, just waiting for something to happen. Because you know why? Because we know it will. Because it will happen. The markets will get into positions where just for a little short period of time, it's a little baby blue moon, and they just give it to you. And that's my trading career. That's how we do it. And I would like you to have that in your tool belt as well, whether you're a really frenetic S&P or whatever trader, really getting in there and trying to mix it all up, or whatever you are. That should be one of the tools in your tool belt, to just wait for them just to make it obvious. If you just hang around, you know, Walking through the streets, you're going to find something in the street at some point you can pick up and put in your pocket. You know what I'm saying? It's just it happens in every area of life. If you're at a company for a long period of time and you've been working there for a while, some little thing's going to happen. Oh, Ted's moving to Hawaii and his position's open, and you know, and suddenly you have an opportunity thrown right in front of you, and you can go grab that opportunity. That's kind of how we do it with these, with this bigger account that we have that we're trading. We're just looking for the easy opportunities that actually do occur, but they don't actually occur when you necessarily want them to, and they don't actually, it's not like you wake up saying, I'm going to go make $1 million today. You're just waiting around for the thing to happen, something to happen where you go, ah, that's a good opportunity. And it can be true on very short-term charts, and it's true on longer-term charts as well. So that should be something I think you should keep in your toolkit, so to speak, waiting for the stuff that's just really easy for you. Okay, we'll move on to the next market here, unless you have any other questions about it.
Let's see. Well, Richard had an in general question. Do you have anything? Do you have October 5th, plus or minus, as an important time period for multiple markets?
The only other really big date I have is the Mayan calendar date of December 23rd, 2012, when the world's going to end, Richard. All of us are going to be gone. So that's the most important date that I have right
okay,
now.
Okay, and just joking. Edward wants to know if you got anything in natural gas.
Okay, let me answer Richard first of all.
Oh.
Honestly, right now, I don't think I do have anything. I know you talked about, Richard talked about having some dates, and forgive me for not remembering, but you might have said between the 5th and the 10th or something like that, something in 3rd and the 8th or something he talked on the radio or told us at one point. I do have quite a few things coming in early October, and we're looking around at these markets to find those. So, I don't have anything sticks out in my mind right at this moment. And I don't lay these out on a piece of paper, by the way, and just look at the piece of paper. I let them come up, you know, in real time when I would really be using them. So, and you may hear those dates, Richard, as we get up to them. That may be the way this unfolds. So real quick, let me move through the markets. We'll get to natural gas because I've been going on here. Gold, don't have anything new to add. We believe that gold made a very important move. We've almost had a 200 point move up. We think that's very important. We lightened up our gold position, our long-term nearly 3-year gold position. And for those of you coming to the Reflected Wave seminar this weekend coming up, which I'm all excited about, I want to show you the exact place we got in gold. It had already been going up for 8 years. I mean, we missed the entry, is what I'm saying. We missed the beginning of the run, right? By 8 years. And we tried to get in on a number of occasions and could not get it the way we wanted it. And we could not get in. And then finally, 8 years into the run, we finally got in it. And that position is up hundreds of thousands of dollars now. That's why I'm saying, you don't have to catch the very beginning of the move. If there really is a big move underway, you can get in the middle, you know, utilizing either pullbacks or sometimes you just have to buy the silly thing. But that's our biggest position that we have on right now, is the gold position. And, you know, we've talked about it for a number of years on the program here. So, but we didn't get in at the start. That's my big point, is that we got in way, way, way late, and they still gave us a beautiful opportunity to do it. And we looked at each other and said, gosh, this is 8 years into this thing, and this is either a great opportunity or it's going to be one heck of a fake out. And, you know, the market, all the signals were for being long, and the thing kept running and running and running. If you go take a look at eight years into it, well, I'll show it. For those of you who are coming, I want to show you our entry in that. Anybody can do that. It's just a matter of your sentiment and your ability, your willingness to take on a position under those conditions. So don't be so sure you want, you know, you don't have to see everything be exactly the same. We'll never see that exact thing happen in gold again, but, you know, you'll see similar things happen and you'll get the idea. Yeah, this is something that's a real opportunity here. You hang around markets long enough, you'll get a thing. I hate to use this as an analogy, but, okay, just forgive me for saying this, but here we go. When I first moved to Las Vegas, in the early 80s, we used to sponsor a company that I had sponsored the Nevada Highway Patrol softball team. So sponsoring it meant that you would go out and help, you know, you would get them their helmets and their gloves and all the stuff that they'd use for the game. And if they needed anything, they would come to you as a company. And you, in return, got to say, you know, we sponsor the Nevada Highway Patrol. It didn't mean that when you get pulled over, you could say, hey, I sponsor the Highway Patrol so I don't get a ticket. And they made it very clear to us that we could never do that, because I sure would have pulled. I would have tried that, because back then I was driving a lot faster than I do now. Anyway, so the guy that was the main guy, who was a policeman, he was on the street. He worked an area where there, at this is back then, where there was a lot of prostitution. And so I said to him one day, I said, you know, it's funny, I've been driving in this town for, you know, at that point I'd been in Las Vegas for 9 years. And I said to him, I've never seen a prostitute. I mean, I've been downtown, I've driven here, I've driven there. I've never seen a prostitute. And he says, if you drove around long enough downtown, you'd be able to see them. They stand out like, you know, like white against black. It's the same way with the markets. Now, I know that's a terrible analogy in some ways, but the fact is that I didn't know when I was driving around that I might be looking at one, because I didn't know how to look. I didn't know what I was looking for. Not that I drive around, by the way, looking for prostitutes. I'm just making the example here. So the fact is that the market's very much the same way. Opportunities are missed all the time. And if you stay around markets for a while, you're going to pick up on what the opportunities are. Somebody that, as an example, utilizes something like Dwayne and Michael's system, you're going to get an idea of what these things look like, so much so that the day may come where you can actually see the opportunities maybe without even, I'm suggesting, perhaps even without even utilizing the indicator, because you get so used to seeing what it looks like. Same thing with reflected wave. You know, I can look at a chart sometimes and go, I know this is a reflected wave bottom without even utilizing reflected wave, because I've been around the block with it. Well, same thing happens just with any kind of thing in the markets. You hang around it, you see it a long time, you watch it for a long time, it gets into you and your brain puts together things, and you just wait for those things to happen. And that helps. But I always thought about that, I always remember that, because I used to think, I'm missing something here. Where are all these women that are walking around doing this? Well, you know, I think he was right. Had I been downtown enough and drove around, they would stick out like a sore thumb. By the way, downtown is much, much cleaned up down here. So when people come out here to Las Vegas, you can go downtown and it's a whole different ball of wax down there than it used to be in the 80s. Okay, December Treasury bonds, nothing to add to that. We had originally forecast back on September 27th that the market would touch 149.09, that would be buying territory for an advance to 150.00 something. I forgot what the number was, but it did that, and it would do it the very next day, and it did. They're still inside that range, so nothing new to add to the bonds, to the T-bond market. I'll blast through these here. Yahoo, Facebook, nothing to add to Facebook. I thought maybe actually there might have been something on Facebook. Just a minute here. All right, well, no bother. We're not going to trade it, but I thought I had seen something on Facebook earlier today that I was going to mention, but maybe not.
Yeah, they issued us – you might have seen something technically, but in the news, they mentioned that their new partner, Datalogix, has done a study, and it turns out that 99% of the people who see – an ad on Facebook and then in turn go to the store and actually buy something, they never click the link.
Oh, okay. That's great.
Yeah, that's their story, man. They're sticking to it.
Yeah. Now, that's very funny. So I saw something on TV where Obama was in a, you know, it was like the movie The Sixth Sense, where the kid sees dead people, and on the Obama saying, I see employed people, even though they're not really there, like, because in the movie.
Got it.
Anyway, for Facebook, just something, this was the thing that I saw, and I just want to mention this. This isn't an outright trade right now, but I want you to consider this. For me, $21.60 is important in Facebook, short term. And so this would mean that if any time between today and October 5th, if they were to get below that level, the 2160 level, especially on hourly or especially daily closes, short it. I like the idea of shorting it, especially if it occurs, you know, pretty soon. You know, I guess, and that is pretty soon, between now and the 5th. But I like the idea of that as a possible setup for a decline. So that would bring prices down. It's not a big deal because this is a low stock. So just mentioning, it would bring us down to $20.30. So keep an eye just in case they do that. That's not a forecast for them to do that. That's if they close below the level here, the 2166 level, pretty soon, within the next couple of days or something. I saw this earlier today, and I was thinking about putting it out as a trade for us. And, you know, it's just kind of there, so keep an eye on that, and we'll talk about it if it does do anything. We talked about the euro already. Let's see here. Nothing else in crude. The September top in crude for multi-month sideways to lower, we're still inside of that. I feel sorry for people, you know, like all of you that have to continue to buy gasoline. You know, just it must hurt. I don't quite remember what it felt like, but, you know, having to go to the pump and the whole thing, the smell of it all, and, you know, I'm not sure I remember much about that. Oh, well. Let's see. We'll go on here.
okay.
You guys just, I don't know how you tolerate me. All right. Let's see. Crude. The British pound, also, we don't talk about this much, but yeah, I don't have it to give it yet. There's something going on with that, and we're going to talk about that as the things come, as the days go by, perhaps. Tesla, nothing new to add to that. Dwayne yesterday showed on his charts that we had gotten below some kind of a supernova cross or a death cross or something that did, in fact, send prices lower for this stock. And I am keeping my eye on this stock. It has good movement. And I believe that in the end, the stock is going to be going higher. I don't have anything for you today, though, on it. And then there's a few other things that we can look at, and then I'll scoot along here. Give me just a moment. But it's pretty quiet. The S&P is still kind of bouncing off of we had a 1433 today. Well, I'm waiting for the charts to come up, but 1433 was in our support and resistance panel. They're testing that level right now. This is definitely the dead zone. Anybody ever see the movie The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken? Anybody know that movie?
I don't think I did.
Okay. Go check that out on Netflix, Dwayne. And those of you who, or whoever, whatever service you use, go watch The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken from a long time ago. Kind of an interesting movie for those of you who didn't see it. Let's see. Okay. Dollar, cocoa, just running through these. Groupon, we're keeping an eye on Groupon. Canadian dollar, copper. Yeah, there's just not a lot. We do have something in corn, but you'd have to be a subscriber to get the full deal on that. So, and you can take a free trial of Messenger Pro and check it out for yourself. You can, for those of you who have an interest in getting some of the roadmaps and that kind of thing, you can go to pagetrader.com and just click on free trial, and it'll put you into a free trial, and you can check out what the current forecasts and things are. We give out a lot of stuff on the radio here. Somebody asked about the natural gas thing. You know, I would have liked to have been in some of this. For those of you who follow Reflected Wave, you knew that the week of October or August 27th was a weekly bottom, and they've had a really nice move off of that. And I'll, you know, when I have something, I'll give it to you here with regard to forecasting. That alone would have been very tradable, but I try to, on the radio program, I try to give out more involved forecasts that really have multiple indications so that they're very highly likely to complete. Until you've been, just for your information, until you've been in a public forum where you're giving out something to people to trade, Dwayne would know this as well, when you're giving out something to other people to trade, and there might be thousands or hundreds of those people there, you know, you have a conscience, you want to get it right, you want to be as right as you can, and you want to also get it right so that you can say I was right. It takes some work to be able to put something out. If you ever think about it from our viewpoint, or that includes Dwayne and anybody else on this program, if they're going to say something about what the markets are going to do, they're going to do some homework to make sure it gets right. And I'll tell you something, this may be something for us to do at some point, but if you were forced to come on and make a prediction about what markets were going to do, it would probably make you much better at calling the market for your own trading, or actually trading for yourself, because what you're forced to do then is there's responsibility now. You're not just sitting there on your own just doing whatever you want, which in some cases is what some people do, but you're actually having to come out and figure out your very best indication. You're not going to get on and say just anything. You're going to give your best stuff. Well, that's how we trade. That's how we do it, we pick the stuff that's like that. And if you came on the radio, if we had a little thing where people came on from time to time and made their own call, you might find that it actually sharpens your trading knife real pretty, because you're now in a whole different field. You got to get it right. You got to double check your stuff. You got to put your best stuff forward. You might find that you have some best stuff that you're not even really that aware of, because it hasn't been drawn out of you by you having to get on the stage and put it out there. So that's just something for you to consider, that it actually does help sharpen your skills to make the calls. And especially if people, if it's public, anybody can get it wrong. I mean, nobody is trying to be one, or we're trying to be perfect, but nobody can be perfect. But the fact is that you will have your ups and downs in it. But boy, it sure can sharpen your skills real nice by having to be in a public forum where you're making those kinds of calls. So maybe at some point we'll do something like that where you come on and make a call. And I would be only too happy to see you. And let me tell you something. I respect people who are able, people have all kinds of techniques. But if somebody comes out, we had somebody who emailed us a week or so ago, and he made two very direct forecasts for two separate markets. And I told Johnny and some others that are here how nice it was for me to see that, and that no matter what happened with the forecast, I respected the fact that this person, no holds barred, came out and said, this is what I believe is going to happen, period. I like that. He's coming out, he's saying this is what's going to happen. And we're still in the process of waiting for those calls to either prove themselves out or not. But that's not even the point. The point is that it helps you to polish your skill, and it drags out of you a precision that you might not have right now when you know other people are listening. So something to consider. I think that's everything we've got, Dwayne, right now.
You sure?
Well, let me think. Yeah, I think so. The S&P is real quiet here. We're just drifting sideways. I'd like to have something else for you here.
Let's see. Yep. We are
nothing else
rolling
news-wise.
Sideways.
Oh, I do want to mention. I'm sorry, and then say what you're going to say. But I just want to mention that this Friday is going to be sort of a partial day for us, for people who are on Messenger Pro, because normally we take Friday off when there's a three-day weekend. And you know that Columbus Day, it's not a strict market day that is closed, but there's quite a few things that are happening on Monday that aren't happening on Monday, which is that the foreign exchange and the interest, or what is it here? What's the holiday on Monday? Columbus Day? Yeah. Foreign exchange and interest rates are going to be closed on Monday. The interest rates being closed, normally that's a big market mover. The equities, the commodities will have a normal day. So we won't be here on Monday. So I'm just letting you know, we will be back on Tuesday with our normal schedule, and we'll have a half day, and we will be on your program if you want us on, Dwayne, on Friday. So.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll be here.
So anything else from you, Dwayne?
Nope, we've come down to this 1435-36 weekly trading zone in the S&P 500. That's where we found support yesterday. It's where we found support so far today. We've been treading water here in this area now for this is the third hour that we've just been you know, just kind of sitting here. And yesterday, we spent almost 10 hours in this general vicinity. And then right before midnight, Chicago time, we took off and into the, through the London Open. We continued up to this zone at 44:45, went sideways for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours, and then coming into the Open on Wall Street, right back down to where we were yesterday. So there's same thing from here to here, back to here.
Yeah.
But that in itself compared to, well, no, I take that back. I was going to say that was better than some of the ranges we've had of late. That's actually an 8-point range from
It's not bad.
From this
it's not
zone.
Bad.
Well, it's bad, I think. I call it bad. It's 8 points.
Well, it's a little bigger than it I know. It's funny you say that.
Hour.
It is a little bigger, though, than it had been. And, you know, it's just the markets. It's just they're very quiet intraday. I like the idea of them closing if we get continued hourly closes above the 33 level. That happens to be a level for us today. I think that that would tend to mean higher prices, you know, a bounce from here, tradable intraday move. But with the market this quiet right now, I think one of the ways I would say of this is that if we stay hourly closes above 33, then the late day trade would likely be on the long side of today's session. So if we can stay above here. But they've, like you said, Dwayne, it's very quiet. In the old days, I'll tell you, for those of you who weren't around 10, 12, 15 years ago, these markets used to just, they ran them every day. Which up, down, sideways, you knew they were going to run. The S&P was the wild man's market. And I remember back then people saying, I don't touch the S&P. I wouldn't touch that thing. Because it was just so not what it is now. It was the opposite of this. So, you know, the S&P has really turned into a different beast here, and it's very comfortable in this bigger, longer-term uptrend that we've had since the 666 bottom.
Yep.
So, yeah.
New show so on TV, 666 Park Avenue. Watch the pilot to see what it was all about. Yeah, it's a typical forces of good versus evil. But I won't be watching it. It's not my cup of tea. So,
well,
since you brought it up, I thought I'd mention it.
Well, that's okay. So, and I did see there was I haven't been to the movies in 6 months, but a situation came up and I did go see something watch about policemen. You know, I forgot what it was called. Something watch. I forgot what it was. Like, it has to do with two policemen who go out and they're doing their job, but while they're doing their job, they inadvertently or sort of getting into the business of people that they shouldn't get into. These are bad guys. And the story that results
movie?
From that.
Is this a current
What's that?
Is this a current movie? You're
this is a current
about?
Movie, yeah.
God, I haven't been in a movie theater in a
I know.
Long time.
It was peculiar being in one. I mean, actually, it felt nice to be in one. I hadn't been in one in a long time. But I can't remember the name of it. Anyway,
Somebody
I had a chance to see a movie.
Probably type it in.
Yeah, it has current people in it, and it might be something fun for people to watch. When does Robin Dane, the trading coach, come back, Dwayne?
Tomorrow, I believe.
Okay.
She's off every Tuesday now. She's got something going on Tuesday, so she'll be out every Tuesday. But as far as I know, she'll be back. If Francine wants to know, if we break below the zone on the ES, where's the next zone? The next zone below us, hold on, Francine, it is 1425/26.
There you
right
are.
Down here. So, 10 points away. And there's, Bert typed in a little earlier. He's been on the phone, but there's quite a bit of news coming out the rest of the week. Let me scroll up, and he listed off a number of stuff, a number of things. Let's see. There's on Thursday the BOE, the ECB, the BOJ, U.S. employment numbers on Friday. So Bank of England, ECB, Bank of Japan, U.S. employment numbers. So a lot of numbers coming up in the week. So the volatility may get turned up. There's interest. All of this stuff, you know, potentially can affect the interest rates. treasuries, currencies. So, with that in mind, we'll bid you adieu, sir, and we'll pick up.
Well, thank you, Dwayne. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for the questions today. I appreciate them. And, Dwayne, I'll be here tomorrow.
Alrighty.
And see you guys then. Have a wonderful afternoon and trade safe.
All right, you too.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was.
Okay, guys, that's going to do it for us. We're giving you 2 hours and 19 minutes and 52 seconds of the stuff that made us famous. Oh, makes you wonder, doesn't it? Let's see, any other questions? Oh, Donald's recommending the movie 2016. Somebody else recommended that to me the other day as well. They said you really should see that movie. So, maybe I will. All right, guys, there's nothing I can add. We're, as you can see, 8 minutes away from completing this hourly candle. And if we close right here, we're going to have a nice little doji, you know, right in the zone. We've got more of a wick to the upside than we do to the downside. I'm not going to try to read too much into this. If you want to do something real simple, just grab your trend line and run it across the top. And if you get a break here, you could look to go up at least to the MA1, which is where you would typically expect to find some resistance. As you can see here, we ran up yesterday, we hit it, came right off of it. The top of this candle was the high of 39 and a low of 37.25. That's only, you know, 0.75 candle, but you can see how that works, the resistance. But then it pushed lower into the next hour. It got all the way down to 36.50. So 2.5 points tradable there. Then it got on the north side of the MA1. And that's what you want to watch for, okay? This is an hourly chart. Once price closes on the north side of the MA1, then you anticipate higher prices. Once it closes on the south side of the MA1, you anticipate lower prices. I know that seems incredibly simplistic, but it's what happens again and again. Now here, we closed above it. We anticipate higher prices. Did we get them? We did. Came back off, but you can't argue that we closed above it, we got higher prices. We closed below it, we got lower prices. We closed above it, we got higher prices. I mean, that just goes on and on to infinity. It's just the nature of the market and how it works. Am I saying that it never gets tricky and maybe you get on the wrong side of the trade even though you're on the right side of the MA1? Yeah, sure, of course. However, it's a pretty good way of staying on the right side of the market. So, okay, Frank, I'll wait for your email. And that's it, guys. I'm done. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, Call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.